Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. William Vizard, who's a professor emeritus and chair of the Division of Criminal Justice at California State University, Sacramento. He's the author of In the Crossfire, A Political History of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And his latest book is Shots in the Dark, Policy, Politics, and Symbolism of Gun Control. Dr. Vizard served 30 years in law enforcement with the Fresno County Sheriff's Department and as a special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Vizard.
Thank you.
And the husband of the U.S. Congresswoman, Gabriel Giffords, who was shot in Arizona along with a number of other people who died, he was on Fox on Sunday basically arguing that there should be better access to mental health records that could prevent psychologically disturbed people from obtaining guns. It's hard to even believe that we're having a debate over this. I mean, surely isn't there, Dr. Vizard, a national consensus that criminals shouldn't be able to get guns and mentally disturbed people shouldn't be able to get guns?
Well, there's a consensus in the abstract. The problem you have with mentally ill is that take the Tucson shooting. You have an individual who obviously, in retrospect, appears to have been mentally ill, but nobody had adjudicated him as such, and so legally he wasn't any different than anybody else. And in a way, you have sort of a clash of two concerns here. Advocates for the mentally ill are in opposition, certainly, to randomly tossing people into asylums or even restraining them against their will or labeling them as mentally ill. So all of those are issues. Families are very reticent about going to court to have people declared mentally ill. So not only do you have a problem with records and making the records available, but significant numbers of people who are mentally ill have no such legal status. And most of them are not dangerous to themselves or others, but trying to figure out who is and who isn't is extremely difficult.
Well, already on the Sunday talk show, for example, Senator Lindsey Graham said that he wouldn't join the filibuster, along which, of course, is being threatened by Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz, Imhoff, I believe, as well.
There's a group to draw to.
Yes. So they're determined to block anything, and the president appears to be quite determined to get something done as a result of Newtown. I think you have to believe the president, and I think he exhibited a real emotional connection, I think. He said this, that news of the killing of those children was the worst day of his presidency. And I tend to think that is true. And I think he feels very strongly about it. But these threatening to do the filibuster are equally determined. But one of the things that Lindsey Graham said, which is what the opponents of gun control are saying, is they're saying, well, you know, the person who perpetrated the Newtown massacre, bought guns legally. So background checks don't work, which I guess reinforces the point that you just made. So when you look at what happened with Jared Loughner in Tucson and this Lanza kid in Connecticut, it seems the problem is that the parents recognize the child's mental illness and yet can't restrain them. The parents of Loughner apparently tried at the last minute to take the keys away from his car. They knew he was up to something. And in Lanza's case, he shot his mother, but she was also buying guns and tons of ammunition, et cetera. So is this where the breakdown is at the family level?
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of problems. I mean, it's obviously difficult to decide that because of somebody's illness, and mental illness is an illness, that they should be subjected to some sort of custody, control, or restraints. There's an unwillingness on the part, so that's a societal concern, a concern about individual rights. There's the concern of families. They don't want to label their, in many cases, they don't recognize how severe it is. And in other cases, they don't want to label the person as mentally ill, fearing that it will affect them for the rest of their lives. They're always, you know, one is always hopeful about one's children. And then, you know, then we go to the issue of background check. I mean, I would disagree with Lindsey Graham's points that background checks make no difference. They certainly aren't a universal solution, but that doesn't mean they don't make any difference. So the problem is there isn't a simple or easy solution to any major social problem or issue, and there certainly isn't an easy solution to this that's readily available to the United States at this point. Probably if we had followed, you know, the British tradition and gone to a nation where gun ownership was highly restricted, we probably wouldn't be having the mass slayings. We might be having other problems, but we probably wouldn't be having the mass slayings. But the horse is already out of the barn on that long ago, and the United States Supreme Court has decided that the Second Amendment is an individual right and a fundamental right. So trying to take the Japanese or the British approach is clearly both historically too late and legally not an option. So,
but Dr. Vizard,
problems at every level.
But there's clearly an asymmetry here between the political determination of the NRA and its followers and the people in the House and the Senate who seem very, very loyal. Either they believe in gun rights, as it's called, or they just don't want to be primaried by the NRA, and they're essentially blackmailed into their position, which I don't know what the figures are on that. But it's pretty clear that the determined minority has more determination than the outraged majority. And as the president said the other day, shame on us if we forget. But the truth of the matter is we do forget. And when these terrible things happen, what happens is the NRA get more members, make more money, and the gun manufacturers sell more product. That's what's so extraordinary about
it. Well, you basically described the situation. The problem is the majority is very soft and squishy, and the minority is very, very committed and dogged, and we just don't have a strong majority in the United States willing to focus on gun regulation, put it at the top of their agenda. There are just too many other issues that people value, and frankly, it's not that strong. Although there's a strong majority right now for so-called background checks, and they probably should be called records checks because they're not background checks at all. There's a strong majority. There isn't even a strong majority for any the so-called assault weapon bill, which passed once before and then timed out after 10-year sunset. So we've actually seen support for gun control drop significantly since the 70s, I would argue, because those people who oppose it have continually made their case, and those people who advocate it have spread their interests over a dozen different issues. And so if you're a legislator in a red state or even in a swing state, for Republican legislators, the primary if you vote for any kind of gun legislation, it is potentially dangerous. And for a handful of Democrats in swing states, the general election can be dangerous. So that's just become the political reality. And I think one of the reasons you see support drop off is people just become frustrated and shift their focus to something else. The kinds of legislation that seem capable of passing and this is largely true, are not the kinds of legislation that would have major impact. And so people just lose interest or get disheartened or move on to something else.
So, Dr. Vizard, do you think then that what Mayor Bloomberg is doing, of putting in TV ads in districts where some of these wavering senators and congresspeople are that may be persuaded. And then in the broader sweep of time and politics, isn't it likely that the soccer mums, et cetera, will grow more powerful and the gun rights fundamentalists will grow less numerous?
Oh, I think if you look at the 20 to 30 year down the road, if any of us can understand what's going to happen 20 to 30 years from now, but if you look 20 or 30 years down the road at demographics, demographics are not on the side of the NRA. As the country becomes, as the current younger voters move up, they tend to be less likely to be gun owners, less likely to be shooters. Hunting has declined significantly in the United States and is going to continue to decline. All you have to do is look at the number of hunting licenses and who obtains them and access to hunting. I mean, as we become a more urban society, it becomes more difficult and expensive. So there are a whole host of reasons that over 20 or 30 years, demographics are not on that side. But in the foreseeable future, it's a different dynamic. And, it's very difficult in the United States to argue against a right. Americans, whoever captures the language of rights in the United States, Benjamin Barber, a well-known political scientist, has argued all American political thinking is about and arguments are about rights. All the American language is about rights. You see that, for instance, in the abortion issue with the right to life and the right to choose. Everybody wants to grab the high ground and claim that they're representing a right. And Americans tend to defer to that, and particularly individual rights as opposed to collective rights. And right now, the NRA and its supporters are winning that argument. Predominantly.
Well, but they're also winning in terms of, for want of a better description, legislative aggressiveness. The way that they managed to get these bills in, like the sunset clause and the ban on assault weapons that died in 2004 because of this sunset clause they slipped in. Always the gun control people are always compromising, and that unfortunately seems to be a pattern with Democrats, that they give in, whereas Republicans are much more determined. And you can see that this is already happening now in the latest funding bill. The NRA, through legislators, slipped in a clause that meant that gun stores didn't have to do inventories, which...
They've been using the funding bills for some time, although both parties have used funding bills to accomplish things that they didn't want to deal with as primary legislation. But recently, the NRA is very adept at lobbying. I mean, they are a very, very adept lobbying organization. Now, you see conservatives losing in other arguments. I mean, if the gay marriage, and actually more than a gay marriage agenda, the anti-homosexual agenda, if you will, has just collapsed. Immigration is largely, I think, collapsing. But on the gun issue, because there just hasn't been the shift in the politics of it, it stayed much more resistant. And I don't see it changing quickly. I do see it changing over the very long run, but I don't see it changing within the foreseeable future.
Well, in the last minute, Dr. Azad, your former organization that you were with for a number of years, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, it doesn't even have a leader because of Republican filibusters. Is there any way to make that agency stronger so that you can actually have
I don't know. They've been a political goat since they came into existence as a separate bureau in 1972. Probably if we just took a rational organizational approach, we would just merge them with the FBI and be done with it. But neither they nor the FBI want that, and certainly the lobby groups don't. So I don't know that it'll happen. But I think they'll continue to be vulnerable. They're a relatively politically weak agency. you know, the Democrats aren't going to sacrifice themselves to protect ATF.
But the laws that NRA have passed protect criminals. It's a fact. The ATF can't trace guns. I mean, that's crazy.
There are dysfunctional statutes. There clearly are, and we have never made up our mind what we want to do about guns in the United States. We're very ambivalent about it. And frankly, the laws ATF has to work with are often contradictory and difficult to enforce. And the NRA makes a big deal about the fact that there aren't prosecutions of certain statutes in certain places. But the reality is that the federal courts are so overloaded that there aren't all kinds. I mean, they don't prosecute the majority of tax cases. They don't prosecute the majority of immigration cases. I mean, the vast majority.
Right.
They don't prosecute theft from interstate commerce. I mean, the federal courts just are incapable of handling the number of federal crimes that exist. So,
right. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time here, Dr. Vizard, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. William Vizard, Professor Emeritus and Chair of the Division of Criminal Justice at California State University, Sacramento. He's the author of In the Crossfire, A Political History of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And his latest book is Shots in the Dark, Policy, Politics, and Symbolism of Gun Control. Dr. Vizard served for 30 years in law enforcement with the Fresno County Sheriff's Department and as a special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about how gay adoption has gone under the radar.
I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head, even if he had to wrong someone. I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head. I hope he's right in the head.